if you're innovating, creating, or making a difference,
this show is for you. Welcome to Over Coffee. I'm Dot Cannon. Here on Over Coffee, we talk with artists and innovators about the process of changing the world in terms of what they do.
As I'm building something, as I'm writing code, I always sort of sit back and think, like, does this thing need to be connected to the world? Does this device need to be automated? I ask that because if it doesn't, then all I'm doing is increasing my attack surface.
In the midst of coming up with some exciting ideas and innovations, how do you prevent that cool robot, that incredible wearable, or other intriguing device from being misused for identity theft or even an act of terrorism if it happens to fall into the wrong hands? Captain Brent Chapman is transitioning military cyber operations officer with the Army's Defense Innovation Unit Experimental in Silicon Valley. In addition to being a security expert, a research scientist, and an educator, Brent is also a maker. His recent projects involve woodworking, 3D printing, and LED lighting. Brent is a frequent speaker at Maker Faires and spoke at the 2016 Sensors Expo in San Jose. Brent, how did you first come to fall in love with being a maker and making all kinds of cool stuff?
So let's say I could probably think as far back as my early childhood when my role model at home, well, one of my role models at home was a character named MacGyver, whom we all, many of us know and love. And as a kid, it was a little tough for me being curious about, you know, the world, about how things worked, about technology. But this character, MacGyver, sort of showed me or encouraged me that, you know, figuring things out, the innards of things, how they work, how they can be put together in different ways was kind of something to be celebrated. So while my brother didn't really enjoy it when I took apart his toys, you know, every holiday, it was actually something really worthwhile for me just to sort of really own the entire process of learning from sort of bottom to top, if you will. And it's impacted my career tremendously. And it's just, in terms of personal growth, it also continues to this day.
Were you able to put the toys back together?
Sometimes. I think, when I introduce myself to audiences and to groups, I say, you know, I'm someone who loves to take things apart, and sometimes I'll put them back together.
Fast forward to today, your brother has probably forgiven you and your work in cyber defense. What are some of the ways that you're seeing terrorists and other cyber criminals misuse some of the things we're making in the maker community?
Sure. So I'll talk about sort of two parts of the maker mindset that apply to this field. And the first is that, you know, we as in makers are naturally very curious. We like to understand the limits of systems or the perceived limits of systems, and we can then bend them before the breaking point so we can understand what rules we can get by. But this isn't necessarily always a bad thing, right? Sometimes it's an important process in how we improve efficiency, is to discover where things break and why they break and how we can fix them. And that has a direct application to, you know, my work as in the cyber world and to others who work in this space. We have lots of systems that were built at different times that have different requirements, and they all work together well sometimes, sometimes not so well. And if we approach these systems with a inquisitive or adversarial mindset, I'll even say, we can find out how to improve them overall. And the second part is that as makers, a lot of times when we create things, when programmers write programs and applications, we don't consider the alternate point of view. We don't consider the implications in terms of security for the things that we make. And we're seeing that now, as technology has become much more accessible, much cheaper, and this includes software and hardware, that the barrier to entry into this world is much, much lower. And so we're seeing the use of technology that we wrote and built expecting to be for good being used in all types of ways that we didn't expect.
You were telling some scary stories at Sensors. What would be one example of one of the ways this technology is being used in a way we never intended it be used?
Yeah, one really great example, I think, is what we're observing in areas of conflict. So the U.S. and some world powers enjoyed a huge advantage in terms of using, you know, I'll use unmanned aircraft, for example, using these technologies, drones, and there are other terms for it, to get an advantage in terms of intelligence, in terms of reconnaissance, in terms of surveillance over our adversaries, right? We could send in these robots into contested spaces, and they could sort of do their thing, and we could stay at a standoff distance and keep our folks safe And what we're seeing now is that partly because of the availability of some of these technologies, which used to be fairly high end, to include computer vision, to include sensors, to include robotics, we're seeing that now some of our adversaries are using similar techniques. They're going to Amazon or they're going to whatever vendor and they're buying unmanned aerials. They're buying quadcopters. And we didn't expect them to use these commercial quadcopters, for example, in the way that they do. They're using off-the-shelf drones in the way that we use and own military drones. And that's really, really unexpected.
What can we do about such a thing? Suppose that we are, well, let's look at several different areas. Suppose you and I are constructing a drone. We don't want this, obviously, to be used to attack a building or something. What are some of the safeguards we can use?
This is a really tough challenge because many folks who are into building systems aren't necessarily concerned about the security of those systems, right? When we built the internet, security wasn't really the first thing that came to mind because we didn't expect people to do bad things on this in a connected world. It wasn't even a concept. So now that we know that with the democratization of technology, with the lowering of this barrier to entry, we've got to make sure that security is not an afterthought and that it's part of the entire coding process. And as makers, that means that we ought to consider how these inventions, how these time savers, how these gadgets that we create could potentially affect us for the worse. So we look at, if I want to automate my home, and if I want to wire my home in such a way that I have visibility over my garage and then my lights, and I can voice command things at home, we have to consider that, what if that were to get into the wrong hands? What if that were to be abused somehow? And that's not an easy thing to do. Sometimes it takes some time to sit down and map things out. If I were a bad guy, what would I do? And it can start as simple as that. And of course, there are much more advanced techniques in terms of war gaming, and in terms of what we call in the industry penetration testing. But all these things require taking an adversary point of view, which is not comfortable for a lot of people.
It feels really weird. For example, I love robots. And it feels strange to think, well, if I were a terrorist, I could do this and this and this with that robot. Ooh, that feels so strange. Suppose I did think that. What could I do as a maker to make that terrorist unable to do something like put a bomb on the robot and send it someplace it shouldn't go?
Yeah, so I think that approaching it in terms of absolutes, in terms of, it's not really going to work. What I mean is that we have to understand that there are inherently just some risk in the things we do, and we have to determine how much risk we're willing to accept. So I don't think that we'll ever live in a world where, despite the best marketing and despite what we hope to happen in our systems, that these things won't fall out of our own control. So we have to think, in that case, what's the worst I'm willing to accept if this thing is to be out of my control? If in the case that I wire my home, what mitigating controls or what compensating controls can I put into place should I lose control of my IoT devices? Does that mean having a physical lock on it or a physical kill switch? Does it mean having some type of system where I can kill power mechanically? These are some of the technical things we have to think about, but philosophically, it's really a question of how much risk are we willing to undertake when we go about these ventures and making things.
In the case of our hypothetical robot, I'm assuming then that could mean maybe adding something that suddenly deactivates. It's something that would make it not function if you knew it fell into the wrong hands.
Yeah, I think if we rely on systems 100% automated, then we get into a little bit of trouble. So maybe in the case of robots, we've seen this in popular culture, we've read it in magazines and in books, maybe you have, in fact, that kill switch, that mechanical switch that cannot be controlled by the system itself, something out of band.
As you teach your classes, what do you find are some of the things your students don't really know is possible in protecting themselves from security breaches that could also protect civilians and makers?
Yeah, so I think that security concept, cybersecurity, is not out of reach. And my goal as an educator is to make it more accessible and more usable to the average person. I want my mom and my grandma and my friends who are not so technical to be able to understand the concept in whatever way is acceptable to them. And it's just whether that's teaching them about the importance of really good passwords or, in fact, going further and saying, hey, you really need to enable two-factor authentication because, hey, what happens if you lose your username and password, you need some sort of backup. And it's communicating that concept or whatever concept it is in a language that's accessible to them. I think that eventually what we in the security world ought to do is democratize security, make it more understandable, make it less of a cognitive burden on folks. If you're required to understand the innards of a network in order to use the network, no one's going to really want to use it. The reason that iPhones or cell phones, for example, have become so popular is because iPhones were just so simple. You didn't need to have a computer science degree to use the thing. So by making these security concepts more accessible to everyone, we do better overall.
What's a good overall way to make that more accessible to someone who, for example, says, oh, I don't do computers, I'm scared of computers?
Well, it's a challenge. It's a challenge because while there's some fundamentals in computer science and in cybersecurity that exist, you have to understand the risks as it relates to what you do on a daily basis. So if you use your phone to communicate with your friends and you are not familiar technically, you've got to understand, well, what are the implications on me personally should I lose control? So you don't necessarily need to get the concepts from a technical point of view, but you ought to understand the outcomes, understand the implications of the security concepts.
As a dad, as a maker yourself, what are some of the security concepts that you can tell me about that you are using to keep yourself and your family safe?
Yes, I love technology. I've got technology all throughout the house. But I think as I'm building something, as I'm making something, as I'm writing code, I always sort of sit back and think, like, does this thing need to be connected to the world? Does this device need to be automated? Because while there's some excitement in connecting my fridge to the rest of the world, in terms of, hey, I can do this thing, like, does that really add value to my life? I ask that because if it doesn't, then all I'm doing is increasing my attack surface. Right? We've seen plenty of examples of folks who have connected things in their home, devices, to the rest of the world and have then been compromised, have their entire network compromised as a result of that thing. That thing, for example, a TV, a smart TV or a fridge, did that really need to be connected to the world to begin with? So you got to think about the pros and cons of what you're doing. You're never going to be able to remove risk completely. So if we understand that, then we can start making sensible decisions in terms of economics, right? Like, if I connect my fridge to the world, then these are my risk profile has increased in such a way, is it worth it for me to do this? And when we start discussing, having that conversation in such a way, then we realize, maybe it's not. Maybe I ought not to automate this thing or to connect this thing to the rest of the web.
I'm hearing you say be mindful as you're having fun with being an innovator.
Yeah, that's true. It's a very exciting field. There's lots of growth. And it's cool to see your idea sort of realized in a physical way, to build robots and things like that. But we've got to always be mindful. It's easy to get lost in the fun. And sometimes it's boring or not fun as it is. We've got to sort of sit back and think about, well, what's the downside of this? What's the bad side of this? And I wouldn't say that there's a formula to it. It just takes a lot of effort and a lot of real thoughtful consideration of what this might affect you personally in terms of your home and things like that, but who they might affect. Are you, by connecting your home, putting some of your family members' information out there, information which they might not want to be released? And this takes time and this takes thought. So just as with anything else, you ought to be thoughtful about any action you take.
Brent talked about one of his own recent maker projects.
So as a kid, I didn't have one of the Cozy Coupes, the Fisher-Price little toy cars, sort of a distinctive yellow and red plastic. And, being a maker, having lots of extra buttons and lights and things like that around the house, I thought it would be kind of fun to upgrade his Cozy Coupe little toy car with a bunch of electronics. So I added a little radio, I added some push buttons so that he could select songs as he likes. I'm all powered by an Arduino board, and the tutorial and a lot of great folders are available on the site, so you should check it out.
Again, BrentMoreLabs.com, Brent's maker site. Brent Moore Labs, that's Brent, B-R-E-N-T, then Moore, M-O-R-E, Labs, BrentMoreLabs.com. From the video he's posted, it seems he had a very satisfied customer. Brent also offered some of his favorite resources he'd recommend to fellow makers.
I think that Make Magazine, one of my favorite publications, is doing a great job of, one, not only getting these ideas out there and showcasing really cool projects, but also increasing is their profiling of, you know, the dangers of the concept and areas of concern and safety precautions that you can take when, you know, having fun. And this includes tinkering with electronics. This includes tinkering with tools. So the concepts aren't, like, completely removed. So I have some favorite websites I like to go to, such as Ars Technica, which is sort of a website dedicated to technology and, you know, sometimes security. I love a website called Slashdot.org, very security-oriented and computer-oriented community. I love to give a shout-out to Adafruit. I know we have a lot of Adafruit fans out there. I think their outlook on technology and how it affects us as humans, it increases our usability, and in some cases how it, you know, the privacy implications of what we do is really, really interesting, and they have really wonderful articles exploring all of those various facets.
The areas we didn't really discuss that I see a lot of people doing are 3D printing and wearables. If your son decides that he wants to be a maker in 3D printing and wearables, what are you going to tell him about security?
Yeah, so 3D printing and wearables have both, you know, are both exciting technology because they've gotten to a price point that's like, you know, just about anyone can get their hands on them. You know, 3D printers are now in the hundreds of dollars. You know, I have one. In fact, I'm looking at mine right now. It's next to my desk, and it was just a few hundred dollars. And, you know, with these things, you can create parts. You can give, you know, life to gadgets or devices that are broken. You know, you can print the backs of remotes now that you've lost in the couch somewhere. You can improve your life in that way. But again, you also, with 3D printing, it's not as obvious. But let's say with wearables, if I've got wearables and sensors affixed all over my body, that sensor sort of gives clues to the rest of the world about who I am. And we're noticing increased usage of sensors by companies wanting to get data about their users, about in terms of health data or exercise data and things like that. So as while we enjoy our Apple Watches and our Fitbits, you know, we also should consider, like, where is that data going? Do I even own this data? And that's a huge, huge conversation that we can have at another time. But if, you know, when I see my family members get a new watch or a new wearable or something like that, you know, I want to convey to them or get them to understand the signature that they're making on the world by wearing this thing. You know, that they're not the only one who has access to this data, that this is being shared. And if they can understand where this data is going, with whom it's being shared, then they can make a better decision about whether to wear the thing or not.
Obviously, with technology, there's a lot of unknown. What are some of the best ways to be prepared for the unknown other than be mindful of privacy for the next 5 years or so as makers?
So technology has moved at a rate that has been hard to keep up with, frankly. Even those who are sort of technically minded have found it sometimes difficult. I think it's realizing, accepting that things will change all the time. And we as humans, I believe, want to be comfortable with using things and understanding things as they're presented to us. It's just easier, right? We don't have to put too much thought into if I give you a cell phone and say, this is a cell phone, you know, you accept that, and you don't have to give too much thought into what else it could be used for. But I think by taking the mindset of always being inquisitive and questioning the other possible uses of things, sort of being flexible, sort of having that MacGyver mindset, if you will, sets us up, puts us in a better place for when technology, in fact, does change and does iterate to the next thing.
As a dad and as an Army officer and security professional, what would you most like others to get from you about innovation and creativity and making a difference?
Sure. I think that sometimes it's hard to put Army or military innovation in the same sentence. But I think that we all, across the country, we're all trying to do our part to make the world a better place. And whether it's me as an Army professional or military professional or as a security professional, this is what I'm trying to do. At the end of the day, I'd like to increase everyone's standard of living while remaining safe. And it's not, I don't believe, one person's job or one group's job, because I've got my worldview, and, you know, my friends and my relatives have their worldview. I think it's one big effort. So I think by finding, you know, the common ground, the places that we can have a similar conversation about the world on, such as, you know, the making community, it makes things better for us overall.
Brent, thank you for your time today.
All right, absolutely. My pleasure.
You and I have been listening to Captain Brent Chapman, transitioning military cyber operations officer with the Army's Defense Innovation Unit Experimental in Silicon Valley. Check out his recent maker projects on his website, brentmoorelabs.com. That's BrentmoreLabs.com. And that concludes this edition of Over Coffee. Thank you for listening. Subscribe to Over Coffee through our website, twomavericks.com. That's two, T-W-O, Mavericks, M-A-V-E-R-I-X, twomavericks.com. And you can contact us at twomavericks@gmail.com. I'm Dot Cannon. Here's wishing you a cappuccino day.